All right, guys, we are pumped to break down our recent trip to Bandon Dunes. You're going to hear a lot of excitement from us about the experience. We want to just point out, and I'm kind of noticing as I'm editing it, that this may sound almost like an ad. We had that many good things to say about Bandon, but I promise you this is not sponsored. This experience actually just really resonated with us and felt it was definitely worthy of discussion. We actually had to break this podcast into two parts because of how much we had to talk about. First, though, I want to discuss when you are traveling for a golf trip, how important it is to use luggage forward. Avoid the baggage fees and the pain of hauling your clubs through the airport, in and out of rental cars, Ubers, whatever you're using to get to and from the airport. All this stuff adds up. Luggage Forward has 12 years of experience in the business of shipping your golf clubs, your skis, whatever you need shipped. They ship to over 200 countries worldwide, and they are a cost leader for places like Ireland, Scotland, and all over the United States. They offer a full money-back guarantee when you do use them. They will even give you up to $25 towards your next shipment if your clubs are not there on time or don't arrive back home on time. I can't tell you how much less stress or how much stress this takes away from traveling. So use the promo code NOLAYINGUP. That's NOLAYINGUP with no spaces. We'll give you 10% off your next order. And again, I can't emphasize enough how much stress they take out of my life in traveling. So without further ado, here's our breakdown of our trip out west to Oregon to Bandon Dunes.
Be the right club.
Be the right club today.
Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. A special episode today. We got Randy here. We got DJ here. We got Tron here. Neil's here in spirit. We are going to break down our recent trip to Bandon Dunes. I'm sure you saw a plethora of material on social media from us, probably to the nauseating level, I would say. We maybe contained ourselves pretty well.
Yeah, Tron's still there, I think, mentally. He looks like a ghost of himself having to be back here in Jacksonville.
I haven't checked Twitter in like 6 days.
Time is standing still.
It is. I'm still recovering.
One of the afternoons, Tron called literally one of the best days of his life.
And he didn't like clarify with like his son, the day his son was born or anything.
One of. But it was on the same level.
Yeah. We are going to break down the trip. We are not going to make this a shot by shot breakdown. I know some people are not the biggest fans of the travel episodes, but Bandon is often a topic of conversation. There's a ton of people listening to this that have probably been to Bandon, a lot listening that either have a trip planned or have a goal of making it out there. So we just want to talk about what the experience was like. I think this was my second trip. DJ, this was your second trip. It was everyone else's first, but I can say, I don't know about you, DJ, that neither you or I had experienced Bandon in this way before, I don't think.
Yeah, we had a little bit of everything. I mean, it was kind of, I don't know, it almost felt Westworld-y a little bit, like someone was controlling things to make it a little too perfect for us. But the first time I was there with a big group, and we had probably, 35 to 40 mile an hour winds for three straight days, 36 a day, and got beat up pretty bad. And it was really fun. And I actually like had a really good time doing that. But what we were missing was, playing it the way it's actually supposed to be played. And so I was looking at the forecast and I was a little bummed when we were, it didn't look like we were going to catch any wind. Sunday we got there, it was that same kind of 30 mile an hour gusting even harder, balls rolling on the greens, all that kind of stuff. And then the rest was just postcard. I mean, it like cloudless one day, the fog would roll in for a little while. It's sunny. We're wearing shorts and t-shirts for part of it. And then, it'd be nice and cool in the morning. I mean, the whole thing was just drawn up like pretty perfectly. The nicest days of the year, I believe, was what all the people kept saying.
I didn't know it could be that good in April. But Tron, Randy, I want to throw it to you guys for like, what were you guys expecting going into it? And how did things maybe differ from that expectation?
So my expectations were obviously high. You hear nothing but good things about the place. For me personally, though, I made a point to not really do a ton of research on the courses and the resort because
thank you for your service there.
Yeah. Well, I kind of wanted to see the place with fresh eyes a little bit and to experience it just with an open mind, with as little preconceived notion or bias as possible. But of course, fully expecting it to be awesome. I think, you know, we'll get into a lot of the specifics, but I think the thing that stood out to me the most was the resort was really cool in that, you know, I was kind of expecting one clubhouse, kind of one point from which all these courses emanate from. And instead it's, you know, of course you have the main lodge, but then you have the golf shops, you know, the Pacific Dunes golf shop with a little restaurant over there. And the Old Mac has a cool little golf shop and little restaurant over where it goes out from. And so while it's all abandoned, you got a kind of a little bit of a different sense at each of these places, not only in terms of, you know, the golf and the courses and whatnot, but even like the food, the menus vary just a little bit. And so it was cool kind of being in one place, but getting this different feel at the different courses.
Same goes for the golf courses too, right?
The courses themselves are all, they all have their own unique flair and personality. And I think we'll get into that. Todd, is that, you know, I'm curious to hear.
Yeah, I kind of tried to take a similar tact. Like, I feel like I've seen so many pictures from there, but I never really was able to put any of them in context. Like, it's not something that I think can be, or it's very difficult to adequately represent, like, what the experience is out there through, you know, just a picture or a video or anything like that. And I feel like it was kind of, it was a hole in my perspective or in my reference. Like, I didn't have a reference point for Bandon. So we were down at Barnbougle in November and everybody kept talking about, oh, this is like Bandon a little bit. And I'm like, well, shit, I don't have that reference point. So, you know, came at it from a similar point as Randy, just high expectations, but not really specific expectations. Just knowing that it's going to be really good, but not really knowing why or how.
Well, that's what you touched on, something I think is really interesting, which is like the experience of going there. And I was always in the same boat before I got there too, which was, you know, you look at these photos and, you know, they're seaside golf holes. And I mean, they're obviously incredible. And this is not meant to like to demean them at all. But I mean, you see kind of seaside golf holes all over the world. And what you can't figure out is just what it feels like to actually be there. And part of that is the travel of getting there. I mean, it's isolated in the middle of nowhere, you know, and you feel like you're isolated at this resort, but in a good way. You don't really feel like you have typical resort, like island fever sort of thing. You don't care if your phone is on or your phone is in the hotel, or you don't have to drive anywhere because there's shuttles. I mean, you're just kind of like at peace the whole week is kind of how I always feel. And that's, like you said, that's really hard to come through in a photo.
I've PTBD. I legitimately have struggled to convey the experience to my wife. And like, I've been walking around in a daze the last 4 or 5 days since we've been back. And
it should
really
be noted that he still has his Bandon Dunes bucket hat on as we're doing this podcast.
I think too, it's really, you know, like the whole, I guess, not having been there, I was always like, man, this place is going to be overhyped, or like you hear so much about it. And, you know, and I was just kind of like, man, these guys are kind of cheese dicks who just keep, you know, right, who just keep like,
it's like no way it could ever live
so
up
hard
to,
yeah, and it did. Yeah, so I guess that's what we'll get into now.
You ever you ever go back to somewhere that you remember from many years ago and you go back to it, you remember it really well, and you go back and everything's smaller, everything just kind of doesn't build like seem as big in your head as it once was. I was afraid of that going into it. I thought, you know, like, now that I've seen a bunch of courses in the UK and stuff, I thought Bandon might seem a little, maybe it doesn't hold up. Not even close. Like, I enjoyed it more this time around. I had more appreciation for it, kind of uncovering, now that we know a little bit more about golf course architecture, how golf courses are run, and just understanding that. I just think it's so unique that we're so lucky and fortunate that Mike Kaiser had this vision to build this, and that David McClay Kidd crushed that first course. If he doesn't crush the first one, the second one doesn't happen. And there isn't this like mythical golf, like resort heaven where you can go play four very unique golf courses, and it's public and it's affordable. Like a lot of the best courses in America are not public golf courses and are hard to get access to. And if they are, TPC Sawgrass is like $450 a round right now. Like Pebble Beach is $550 a round. These courses, like in April, I think it's $175 per round for your first round, and then it's $90 for your second round. So you get two world-class golf courses in one day for less than it costs to play like Kiowa or any of these other, you know, public, highly renowned golf courses. And I don't know, like you alluded to the kind of remote nature of it. And it is tough to get there, but once you're there, that's part of the appeal, you know?
Totally.
Like, it's the hardest of the hardcore golf fans are there, and you just have this common bond and kind
if
of
it
that,
was easy to get to, it wouldn't,
right.
It yeah. wouldn't have that same
yeah,
mistake.
No, I totally agree.
And it's, you have that, you know, there's a kind of a bar, like a true clubhouse atmosphere of a kind of a private club that you all belong to. You know what I mean? I mean, you just have a common bond with everybody that's there, and everybody talks about what course you played so far. What'd you think? Oh, the conditioning of this one's blah, 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 and all that. So
it's weird feeling kind of just innate, like wholesale trust of everybody at this resort that you've never met. I mean, how often do we just leave your golf bags? I got my wallet. Yeah. I got my phone. It's just, oh yeah, I don't know. Whatever. It's fine. Where are you taking this? Yeah, I'm sure it's cool. Go ahead, man. Yeah. Everybody here is cool, I assume.
Take
which
care
they
of
were.
But no, I think, you know, we've talked a lot on this podcast. Most of the travel episodes have been in some capacity about Lynx Golf, and, you know, touring around the UK and Ireland showed me what just such a more interesting style of golf, playing along the ground, playing with the wind and throwing your yardage book out and not caring if you have to hit a 4-iron from 100 yards, maybe if you want to get one under the wind. And this is the only place I've played in the States, and maybe the only one that exists in the U.S. that plays similarly from a turf standpoint, from like an overall wind condition, firmness of the greens, and everything from tee to green plays the most interesting style of golf and the most fun style of golf I've ever played.
And I think that's one important distinction that sometimes I think people can get carried away a little bit with, you know, why doesn't everywhere do this, or what, you know, at Bandon they do this, and it's like, well, like it's a unicorn out yeah. there. I mean, it's like the land is perfect, the development, the owners, the, you know, the property management group, all that stuff is like, that just doesn't happen in other spots. And so it's hard to, you got to almost take away the little things like the, you know, the restaurants and stuff like that, Randy, that you were talking about, and like little things like that you can replicate from Bandon, but you got to just understand that, like, you know, short of having like a sandy seaside,
yeah,
you know, public golf experience, like, you know, it's really hard to recreate that, which is what makes it so cool.
And the steps they've made, you know, Bandon being first, then came Pacific Dunes, the third golf course, and we're going to break down the golf course in detail, is completely different than both of those. And then the fourth golf course is completely different than the three before it. The fact they've added so much variety over the years, and I'm excited to see what the future of it's. I have no idea what future plans they have, but I mean, any excuse we can get to come back. Hope they build another golf course so we can go back. We're probably going to go back anyways, it sounds like.
Shit, we're going back in like October.
Yeah, if they'll have us, we will be back.
Oh my gosh.
So we touched on it a bit. I want to kind of quickly break down the ways there are to get there. So we're coming from Jax. It was only one connection for us. We flew Denver to Eugene.
It's tough to get to the West Coast from Jacksonville. Basically, Denver is the farthest west you can get on a direct flight out of Jax, and then so you either have to connect in Houston, Chicago, Charlotte, and then fly into Portland, or so the Jax to Eugene thing was kind of a
it was a close call.
It was close. We were running, we were doing the Home Alone run through the airport a little bit. We had a little flight delay, you know. I'm sure everybody wants to hear about the flight delay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So here's what happened. So we were splitting.
How dare they?
But you know, it worked out okay. We got to have a couple pops at the PGA Tour grill.
That's true. We were living way under par.
We were taking it way deep, living under par.
But the, you know, flying into Eugene, it's 2.5 hours from Bandon, but the appeal of that is the drive from Eugene to Bandon is spectacular.
Yeah.
It's on, like, I would prefer it as to flying into North Bend, I think.
I think the part of the appeal too was the chowder at McMenamin's.
Yeah. Oh God, how good was that?
Yeah.
Randy and I went back to McMenamin's in Eugene. Shout out to McMenamin's in Eugene.
But the drive through the forest and along the river down the coast, it's you know, it gives you perspective into how far away from big cities you are and all that. And you can also fly to Portland. I mean, as we were getting delayed, we're looking into, like, can we get to Portland? You can drive, I think it's like 4.5 hours maybe from Portland.
We were looking at, like, all right, can we fly into Boise? Can we fly in, like, yeah. Seattle?
We had whole pack Northwest.
Can we fly into Reno and drive 10 hours? Like, we're like, how are we going to get there and still have golf to play on Sunday, basically?
Yeah. Well, and that's, so I found myself feeling very stupid once I, like, put it in perspective. So I'm like, God, like, we have to get there tonight. Like, what? Or what? You know, or we'll miss a round. Like, well, how many are you playing? I don't know, 7?
There was one
but
point
we can't
where
miss one.
The gate, or the ticket counter agent was like, all right, you can fly to Dulles. And then, like, Dulles to Seattle, Seattle to Portland, and get there, like, you know, 2 hours before you would otherwise on that next Flight to Eugene. We're like, all right, cool. Like, maybe that's worth it. It's going to get us another 9 holes, man.
Yeah. There's sick. Also, you could fly to North Bend. North Bend is 30 minutes from Bandon. It doesn't fly to a lot of places. But in the summer,
it's mostly San Francisco, right?
It's San Francisco, but in the summer, there is a Denver to North Bend flight. So I think starting in June, they run that flight. It is the Bandon flight, essentially. Right. So they've made it, you know, it's part of, you know, Tron bought the Dream Golf book, the book about Bandon Dunes, and in it they talk about the inherent challenges of it, and it not being near a population center or near an airport was like, okay, is this thing really going to work? Like a very serious question.
Well, and I know we've talked about this with regards to Kaiser before, especially with, you know, Stream Song and Barn Boogle and that kind of stuff. But imagine the balls it takes to plant your flag and like try to make something like this work, or the vision it takes and all this. I mean, you can't like commend those guys enough that actually made this thing happen, because it would be, if you were an investor or whatever, and you're reading things about golf, you're reading things about, you know, oh, rounds are down and resort spending is down, all this stuff, like making this thing happen where it is, it seems impossible to me.
And,
it's crazy.
And not only is it important for golfers to go visit it for the fun factor, it's important for kind of golf history in the way things are going, honestly. If, like we said, if McClay Kid doesn't crush Bandon Dunes, the second course doesn't get built, there's not four courses there. Sand Valley probably doesn't happen. And then, I don't know, does Stream Song happen? Like the effect that this has had on downstream.
I don't think there's any way in hell Stream Song happens.
Right?
Well, and like, I think Andy's talked about this a lot too, Andy Johnson, but a lot of it even goes back one step further to Sandhills, where Kaiser was a member also. And, you know, just him seeing, okay, this can work in the United States, and, you know, people don't need to have, it doesn't need to be, you know, a TPC perfectly manicured with scissors kind of golf course. Right. You know, people are okay with that. You know, that might even be the starting point.
And I think, but you touched on it too, like with all of the bad trends in golf and the balls it takes to build it, like this is bucking that trend and is a good trend towards golf, right? It's not excessive. The clubhouse is not massive. Things aren't overpriced within it. We're going to get into kind of the total atmosphere here, but this is something in golf that is worth celebrating. Not only is it the most enjoyable experience you can have, but it's, we want to emphasize it because of how important it is. You know, for as critical as we are of so many things, this is something in golf that is totally worth celebrating. A quick break to remind you guys that summer is just around the corner. This means you're going to be doing hopefully a lot more traveling. Hopefully that means more golf trips, vacations, summer camp, whatever you do with your free time in the summer. Nothing is worse than heading out on a trip and realizing you forgot something important. So make sure you switch to an OGO bag. We are all using the OGO Mutant Travel Bag. I can't emphasize enough how much stuff you can fit in these things. All of the OGO travel bags come with their signature thoughtful organization, so that you'll have a place to put your most important things. There's smart features such as separated pockets for dirty clothes, dedicated place for your shoes, and it just makes your life easier when you get home. Be sure to make the most of your time off this summer. Upgrade to OGO, and special for listeners of this podcast, celebrate back to summer but with OGO by saving 25% on all travel bags on OGO.com with promo code NLU. OGO, the world's best bags. Let's get back to the podcast. Yeah, we're going to do our ranking of the courses. We're going to highlight some of our favorite holes. I want to emphasize how torturous of a process that was, and how back and forth. It sucks to rate one of these courses fourth. It honestly does, because they're all world class, and I think we're all going to have very different ratings. But
fine rating one of them.
I want to talk a bit about, you know, one of the biggest takeaways we have and things we've talked about the most amongst ourselves, even more than the golf courses, is just kind of the whole atmosphere of the entire place. So for those that may, you know, try to describe this to somebody that hasn't been there, what you guys felt like you got treatment from the staff, and how that really added to your experience.
I'll start. I thought the staff was awesome. I thought that the best way I can kind of liken it, the whole atmosphere is kind of like a ski town mentality. Where life is certainly not moving fast. And I think everybody who's there is genuinely happy to be there. And I think that shows in their interactions with people. And I guess if that's not true, they do a hell of a job of faking it. But I think, you know, Neil said it best, and it was kind of like going to adult summer camp, in that you're just out there and you can kind of do what you want and have fun. I think what I was most amazed with was, for being such a highly regarded resort, there was just a real lack of pretension kind of among the staff. And I never felt like, you know, you're kind of walking on eggshells, or you're scared to kind of do or say the wrong thing. And that's just, it was very relaxing. And I think it kind of just puts you at ease. And then the staff, you know, they're incredible. Like the starters every morning, they are engaging, they're funny, they just make you feel at home, and they give you the sense like, hey, we're really excited to be here, and we want to share it with you. And that's,
I could have talked to the starters every morning. Yeah, for like an hour.
I mean, even our guy, I think Mark at the preserve, the very first time we rolled, like it was just awesome.
But at the same time, not trying to kiss your ass.
No, it's that very fine line.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction. Is like, to me, true like luxury isn't gold plated everything or people trying to kiss your ass. It's like authenticity and anticipatory service and just,
yeah,
nothing's excessive about
it. Kind of what you said about sharing. Like they're excited to share this with you, right. And they're excited for you to see what it's all about. You know, because they know already.
Right.
You know, like, hey, this is, you know, I love being here. There's a reason a lot of those people are there. Like our caddy, Squid, like he went there for the first time and he was like, well, shit, I'm going to move here. I'm going to work here. Like, I want to spend my life here.
Yeah.
And they aren't there to gouge you. Like, it's, you know, when you're done with your round, if you want a $10 sandwich, it's there. If you want fine dining, they also have that there. If you want, you know, they got an Irish bar and restaurant. They got this Asian theme going over at Bandon Dunes, and like nothing about it was excessive. And just, yeah, and golf trips inherently are expensive, but I don't think there's anything about Bandon Dunes that I looked at was like, wow, that's expensive.
And even the lodging where we were, it's very nice. But again, it's like it just fits the property. You don't feel it's not. I'm trying to think how to say this because it is a compliment. It's not like Todd said. It's not gold plated. Like I think it would be weird if it was just overly luxurious, kind of out in the dunes of Western Oregon. It's kind of understated and muted, but just really nice.
Like there was like, I mean, I think other than showering and sleeping, I think we spent probably 20 minutes.
Yeah, three, I mean, there's no reason to be in there. So but from like, there,
the water pressure was good.
Yeah,
the beds were comfortable.
Right,
like they got the right details right, and everything comes back to just golf.
Yeah, you know,
like that's the centerpiece of the whole resort, and there's nothing there that's trying to detract from why you're there in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So I think that hopefully that kind of summarizes, you know, the overall feeling of being there and how that really adds to the trip. And here we are, I don't know how many minutes into the pod, we haven't started talking about the golf courses yet. So that's kind of how much the whole experience resonates.
The golf courses are going to be in parts 7 through 9 of this podcast.
So we had 5 of us, so we wanted to play a game throughout the week, and we couldn't really play Wolfhammer, so... We made our own stable for game, and
it was really fun.
Shockingly worked out.
Would recommend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll give you the brief summary. Is it was 8 points for an eagle, 4 points for a birdie, 2 for a par, 0 for bogey, and -2 for a double bogey. Net. All net. What made it interesting was we added in the concept of a multiplier.
NBA Jam.
Rally scoring.
Yes. Rally scoring.
So if you make a birdie or a net birdie, your next hole is worth double. So if you make a par, that's now worth 4 instead of 2. And if you make another net birdie, your next hole is worth 3x. Or if you make an eagle, like that doubles it up. That makes it, you know, if you make one eagle, that makes it the next hole worth 3x instead of 2x. And Neil got all the way up to 7x. I think it's no surprise that he ended up winning the Stableford.
It was like watching, at the end, it was like watching Tiger at Pebble in 2000.
He made like
just, we're all just waiting to watch history.
He made an eagle net double eagle, which was already 3 times. Like, I think I lost. He didn't even have to finish the final round and won, beat us pretty badly in Stableford. But if you're looking for a fun like variation of Stableford or some fun game throughout the course of the week,
yeah, highly
recommend it. Multiplier
was great. The only thing I think that we all kind of took away is that in order to kind of crush the runaway victory, you need to have a multiplier, a negative multiplier as well.
Some big downside.
You need to have some big downside.
Because, you did have the multiplier.
Because Neil did have, he had a couple like 4X, and then all of a sudden he's standing with like a short-sided chip and he chunks it into the bunker because he's thinking about the 4X double.
and you lose 10 points.
But there was no way he could come. He can come back to the field.
I think his game was particularly well suited for modified Stableford scoring.
And his cap is officially in question as well.
Yeah. 10 handicap out there shooting 76s.
I flagged that. Yeah.
Flag for review. All right, so we're going to talk some about, obviously in pretty good detail here, about the golf courses, but I kind of wanted to start by just describing what makes what I think makes a golf course fun, I kind of want to hear from you guys as to what how you describe a fun golf course, because some of the comparisons I made earlier to TPC and Pebble Beach and something like Kiowa, people have a hard time distinguishing just like really good views on a golf course versus like what really made it fun. I think that Bandon has, and all the courses really have the concept of the views, yet at the same time, you can always find your golf ball. The amount of golf balls that we played with on this trip, I think I brought a couple extra dozen and didn't even crack into them over there. Given the feeling that you have to take like a free swing at it, yet incorporating strategy and decision making, not caring if you got to hit a 3-wood from 160 or a 3-iron from 300 yards. Like, I played at Stadium a week before this trip, like from the tips, and didn't have like a fraction of the enjoyment that I had at any single one round at Bandon. I think those are the types of golf courses that need to be celebrated, and I think it needs to kind of be like highlighted that is kind of what sticks out to me and how fun they are, was going and finding your golf ball and almost always being in play.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think something too is, you know, if you're a 20 handicap, you can go, and for the most part, you know, if you get on trails and get a little sideways, that gets tough, or I could see how Pack Dunes would get a little bit tough, but like Bandon and even Old Mac, like you know, it's probably just as enjoyable for a 20 handicap as it is for the 2 handicap.
Well, the thing that I think, I don't know, there's a long answer to your question probably, but the thing that makes it most fun for me, and I think trails and Pacific Dunes do the best job of this, is that they just give you, they give you enough rope to hang yourself, basically. And if you want to go out and
that sounds fun.
But if you want to go out and you want to play ultra conservatively and you want to play to the fat parts of every fairway and the fat parts of every green, you can probably go out and shoot a number that you're going to be pretty happy with, and you're going to go sit in the clubhouse and have a beer and it'll be fine. But they know, like the designers of all these courses inherently know that you don't want to do that, and they make the risky shots so appealing that you can't resist, and then you just find yourself in these horrible spots, and it's completely your own fault. And as soon as, you know,
you knew it going in.
And you knew it going in, but you did it anyways. And like that, I don't know, that is weird maybe, but that to me is really fun. I think that's as good as it gets. And I think that, you know, all of us probably went through when we played, I don't know how many, 150 some holes over 3 days, 4 days. And so all of us, I think, kind of went through stretches where we were playing that first kind of golf, and you're like, oh, wow, like, I can, you know, I can't make a bogey right now. Like,
you can throttle it up.
Yeah. And then as soon as you're like, okay, yeah, now I'm hitting it so good, I'm going to go for this shot. And then you, boom.
Deject.
Yeah.
I was talking some with Dave McClay Kid, no big deal, before we went out. And I we'll get to this. I still think I put Bandon Dunes first, and I shot my 2 highest scores of the week at Bandon. And I told him that. And he said, what he said was like, it seems like the most gettable. He's like, his read is it seems like the most gettable, and it leads to overly aggressive play, and then you pay for it. Yeah. And that's kind of the perspective I got. I mean, yeah, like you said, as soon as we started posting a couple good numbers, like, all right, boom, exactly. Let's get out and get it. Boom, 45 on the next 9.
I think I shot, we played Old Mac one morning, and I shot the lowest 9 I've ever played. No big deal. I shot 2 under on the back at Old Mac, and then I shot 49 at Pacific Dunes.
All right, so let's do that. We got there Sunday, and the first stop we made was at Bandon Preserve. For those who don't know, Bandon Preserve is a 13-hole par 3 course. It is the same clubhouse as Bandon Trails. It was designed by Cor Crenshaw, as was Bandon Trails. Kind of a good warm-up to the trip, I think.
Maybe the perfect warm-up to the trip.
It might be. The bookend. We bookended it. We played in the very beginning at the very end. Randy, what was your opinion of Preserve?
Yeah, it was great starter. You know, you get out there get to hit some wedge shots. I thought, you know, it sneakily has some of the best views on property. It's just a...
Would you say low key?
You know, low key. Yeah, maybe not even low key. I mean, it's...
Regular key.
It's great. So we played it twice. The first time we played it, we had our, you know, we had our bags. We had, you know, carrying, push carting, and... I think the biggest thing for me was the second time we played it at the very end, we just took 2 clubs. And you know, thinking back, I think I had more fun just with 2 clubs. And the reason is it forces you to kind of get creative, try to hit different shots. So I don't know. I think I'd be curious what you guys think, but I almost think the way to go is, hey, just grab, you know, 2 or 3 clubs, walk and just have a good time, enjoy the views, and just really get creative and have fun out there. I think that, for me, is the best way to approach the preserve.
And I think that sets you up well for the rest of the trip, too. You know, I mean, that's essentially
what kind of helps you get in the mindset.
Essentially what you're doing on a lot of the other, and I don't know, maybe this is just like the way that I play, and I'm not good enough, so I think I just create overly, you know, aggressive challenges to give myself a built-in excuse. But like, there were not very many shots where I was like, okay, it's 140. I guess I'll just hit it, my 140 club, you know, full on. And I mean, the whole time you're thinking about which slopes you're using, how high are you trying to hit it, you know, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. So the preserve is a great warm up for that.
I thought the preserve too was the first day when we got there. It was windy.
Yeah, it was whipping.
Holes were like,
yeah,
some of those par three holes were almost par fours.
And then, you know, like, I think probably one of the toughest holes out there is that little 50 or 60 yard
the Dell
Dell punch bowl thing. It's cool, you know.
Yeah,
it is such a great kind of glance into what golf doesn't have to be 18 holes, par fours, par fives, par threes.
That's what I love. Is the 13 holes was like, why is it 13 holes? I don't know. That's just,
you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's what we, because why not? Like, that's, you know, that's what we had money for or land for or whatever.
It was like at Barn Boogle when they were like, well, there's 20 good holes out here. And he's like, well, just build 20.
Yeah, I don't think any of us walked off and were like, God damn, I wish that was really fun. But like,
it was four holes.
It's just not an official round.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, you obviously eliminate drivers, so it's the benefits. The most fun shots in golf are approach shots, I think. So you're essentially playing from the middle of the fairway. You can choose your tees. You don't have to set. You don't have to play the same set of tees throughout. Like, hey, do you guys want to play this back?
Yeah, you want to play like an eightsome if you want.
You want to play it all the way up if you want. Hit little 50-yard fillet nine irons in there, and like that's, I don't know. It gives you, it's full size greens, full size slopes, and every other aspect you would want of like an approach shot. It's not a mini course. It's not a pitch and putt. Like it's full. You know, you're hitting sometimes eight irons, seven irons into some of them. But I don't know. It's a great warm up into kind of flighting the ball under the wind and learning to use the wind and the slopes and all that. So. And it's like perfect for like the emergency. Like, you know what? 36 holes wasn't quite enough today. Let's go see if we can squeeze off the preserve. They don't close it until 30 minutes after the last group has finished on any course. So they keep it open. Like, and people play like into the sunset pretty much.
Just a good like bet settler also.
Yeah.
You know, if you had like just a fun.
It's like having a giant buy hole.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So after that, we went to our afternoon tee time at Bandon Dunes. You mentioned we had about 30 mile an hour sustained winds, 40 mile an hour gusts. That's the top five windiest round I've ever played in, but that's part of the experience. And I don't think any of us were kind of lamenting it. It was kind of like, all right, this is what you sign up for when you come to Bandon.
It almost, the wind, it was just relentless. There were a couple times I just wanted to like crawl under inside a dune and just
take a break,
get it out of my ears for a couple minutes. Yeah, it for sure. I'm with you. It was certainly
mental,
probably
midget over here,
the windiest round I played, but it was actually, like, all things considered, it was the best round I played all week. I loved it. I'm so glad we started at Bandon too. I think that was the course to really, I mean, we went around the preserve, but I think, you know, Bandon just gives you, it's just a great kind of
intro.
Yeah, you just kind of get the full effect a little bit
when you make the turn from, you know, 1, 2, and 3. It kind of eases you in, and then you make the turn on the second shot down to the ocean on four. It's this dog leg down to the ocean. It kind of wiggles down there and you're just like, whoa, all right, yeah, we're here.
That's your intro. That tee shot on four is kind of, you know, we got a huge downwind on it, and goes down through these dunes. You don't see the green at all. You can see where the ocean is, and then it turns and you are facing the ocean, and the green looks like an infinity pool up against the cliff. You don't realize how high up you are yet until you get out to that cliff. But I like doing it that way too, with Bandon being the first course built there. That kind of playing, we almost kind of, I think we actually did play them in order when they were built.
I was just thinking that too. Yeah. I wonder if they did that on purpose.
Yeah, they might have done that. But you get your intro to the ocean is this kind of eureka wow moment of seeing it. And I think somewhere in that dream golf book, Kaiser or McClay Kidd talks about the effect of building a hole at the ocean, or building the hole at your view to hit people in the face with it. That's a difference I noticed at Bandon Dunes, is there's a couple more holes that play right at it. compared to like Pacific Dunes. Pacific Dunes utilizes the coastlines to, for great holes alongside of it, but that effect, and we'll get to that 12th hole too, is a par three that plays right at the ocean. But you know, they designed it with this prevailing wind that kind of comes from the right or from the north, and you know, they have these mounds that you can use with the wind to shape balls back to the pin. And that stretch, and we're going to get to our favorite stretches, is kind of kicks off my favorite stretch on the property, I think. So
yeah, and I should have started at the top. This was really my first links experience, whereas you guys, obviously Australia and Sally, I know you spent a lot of time over in Ireland, Scotland. This was my first true links experience, and so even the, like you just said, the microcosm of banding kind of building up to that fourth hole, it was like that for me, but on this grander scale where, you know, it's like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like, you know, you get the mounding and the bunkering, and then, you know, you come to the fourth hole and you see the ocean. It's like just kind
overload.
An overload of the senses. Yeah, it was. And to play it in that type of wind, you know, we really didn't get the rain, and I think I'm fine without that for now. But having that wind really whip, it was like, man, this is kind of what it's all about, isn't it?
And then the gorse was blooming.
Oh, God.
So there's yellow, there's pops of yellow.
Like the most vibrant yellow.
I think, I don't know, we got really fortunate with weather. I think it's emphasized that. But April might be the play, or kind of like spring might be the play. It's less
kind
busy.
Of a shoulder season too,
yeah,
right?
It's prices are lower. It's not quite the, you know, I don't know. You're going to get unpredictable
the days
weather.
Are still long enough.
Yeah, all plenty long enough. I mean, sunsets were after 8 p.m. But there's not like a 6,600 yard option. They make you play the tips, which are like 7K or 6,300 from the greens. We went 6,300 and we never went back. It was like not even, you don't even think about it. Yardage books get thrown out when it's that windy. But how much fun was golf to play from kind of shorter than what we usually play it at?
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised. I think maybe Tron and I were talking about this, that I still had a ton of like 4 and 5 irons into greens from 6,200 yards.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of a nice, fun change of pace, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's also, mm-hmm. it's obviously built for the wind and built for, you know, it's 6,200 yards, you know, kind of by design. But
there's long holes and there's short holes. There's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and you're either, I don't think, you know, a lot of the time when you play a course 300 or 400 yards, maybe too short for your, like, ability or distance, you're always having these awkward wedges in your hands and stuff like that. I really didn't feel like that was the case there. And even if you do have that awkward distance, you can putt it. You can bump a 7-iron. You can do so many different things with it.
I did think that some of the bunkering was pretty awesome from 6,200 yards in that, I mean, Solly is, you know, far and away the longest player in our group. And there were a couple pop bunkers and stuff that, I mean, just never even registered with us off the tee. And you get up there and he's like, fuck, I better not be in that pop bunker, you know. And there are just a lot of like nice little punches back to the really long player, even on a short yardage.
But it was fun too. We got two looks at these courses for everyone but Old MacDonald. And some days that there's a certain bunker that's in play that's 340 out, and then there's the next day was like, okay, it's 210 to get over that bunker. Right. That might be an issue. I mean, that's kind of where, you know, you can play the course in one wind and look and be like, what's the purpose of these bunkers here? What's going on here? I don't understand this. And then you play it in the next one, you're like, that's why. That's exactly why. And that's what, I don't know, it's so hard to design courses. I would imagine so hard to design courses to play in two drastically different winds. And all of these courses do. I mean, there's a winter prevailing wind and a summer prevailing wind. But I feel like you could have played, you know, we kind of got a look at them with different winds, and they you feel like you're playing a different golf course, but neither one feels less or more fair. Like it feels like it was designed with the idea in mind that, hey, we got to deal with both these conditions.
And then one day we had kind of a slack, like weird wind that was kind of transitioning between those two, you know, a north wind and a south wind, and it was kind of coming straight off the coast. And that was, you know, they were like, we maybe get this 4 or 5 times a year. I actually like Bandon Dunes. I think I liked it. I thought like I was so pumped to play the second round there, and I liked it less the second time around.
I agree with you. I think spoiler alert. I would rank it fourth. I think we need to preface all of this, of course, with like it's still one of the greatest golf courses I've ever played in my life.
I love all my children.
Yeah, the whole ranking thing is like kind of pretty inherently flawed since they're all really good, but if I had to put one fourth, I think I'd put it fourth. And I think one of the things that McClay Kidd said on the podcast, or I think it was a podcast, or maybe it was something else I was listening to, but he kind of talked about how, you know, Doak had the benefit of going second. And I thought that really, really, really shined through in that Bandon Dunes is spectacular. And if you're looking at it as like, you know, this was the first course they did, it's an awesome effort. It's great pretty much all the way around. But everything that it does well, I think Pacific Dunes
just amps it up.
Just kind of amps it up and does throughout. Whereas I thought that there were pockets of Bandon Dunes, or even now I'm like struggling to remember, you know, three or four of the holes, which
but like,
doesn't,
like,
didn't happen on
like
the other courses.
Like 4, 5, and 6 is one of the best.
Do you think the conditions played into that at all?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so. I mean, I think...
Because I'm trying to think, like, Pacific Dunes in that 35 to 40 mile per hour wind could have gotten...
could have gotten really ugly.
Almost over the top.
Yeah. No, totally.
And I think... and I haven't played Pacific Dunes in that conditions, but I almost think Bandon is better suited maybe for that type of wind.
Yeah,
at least
I
for
think
my
that's
game.
True. Totally yeah. agree.
So, yeah, you talked about rankings. Going into this, I kind of thought, everyone that ever said, you know, Bandon Trails is my favorite course at Bandon Dunes, I kind of rolled my eyes at, like, okay, like, cool, trendy. I now see, will never criticize anyone's rankings. If you like Bandon Trails first, if you like Old MacDonald first, or whatever your order is, it can be the complete opposite of mine. I can be like, yeah, I could see that. Like, yeah. If I go back the next time, I might change my order around. I might change my favorites around. But kind of like you said, loving your favorite children, it's, I don't know, they're all truly amazing. And you hate to even put a course fourth, but that was blasphemous to call Bandon fourth, whatever you just said.
Can we talk about 12 at Bandon Dunes?
That was, I think, the hole that
kind of
screwed me up for a while. I was like pretty shook after we played that one. I just was so uncomfortable on the tee in like such a cool way. I don't know.
Kind of back down to the ocean, and there's a bunker front right,
front left,
or front left.
It's a little kind of Redani, a little bit,
a little yeah.
And it's in the wind,
just a little pop bunker. It's like a little
road hole
in the middle.
It's like a road hole bunker, and it defines the entire hole. Like if it wasn't there, it would be the dumbest little par three.
Didn't you say something like, "Yeah, the bunker's not even in play" or something, and then you hit it
directly into it?
Most people don't realize, you know, where that bunker is. That's all, hit it right in the middle.
You know, DJ's like, "Man, like I should just like hit a 40% 5-iron down to this."
I was so in my own head playing. What was the wind was coming straight in, right? Yeah. Basically, like so
the first time,
yeah,
it was off the right.
It was hard off the right with the right pin.
Yeah,
kind of a kidney shaped green, almost a little slanted kidney shaped green,
right at the ocean. Just
big kind of dune to the right of the green, short right, protecting.
And DJ's just lost in the sauce.
I was so lost. Everyone's like, "What do you do? Just hit it?" You know, I'm like, "Well, I just." My ball's going to get beat up in that wind. I'm going to be 30 yards left. I don't know. I'm like, you know what? I think the really smart – it was almost like the glowing brain meme a little bit when I finally hit, you know, like I think the play is to just chip a 5-iron and like 10 hop it up onto the green, which
was not
– didn't go well. Yeah. No footage is available of that shot, but it did not go well.
And then I think right after that, you know, like 14 was directly into the wind, right? And like, you know, we're hitting...
So that's 15, the par 3.
Or 15. Yeah. So that's, and we're hitting, you know, 140-yard 4-irons and 3-woods.
So that's kind of what I loved about Bandon was it was clear the way I interpreted it was, you know, you start with 3 inland holes and then you get introduced to the ocean, right? You get the going right at it with 4. You're playing alongside it with 5, alongside it with 6. You come back inland for 7 through 11. You get hit with it again at 12, and then you come back out 13, 14, and then you get it again 15, 16, and essentially 17. So it's kind of spaced out. There's not like a Pebble Beach stretch of 4 through 10, and then you go inland and don't really see it for a while. I thought that it was probably, I would imagine, the way they wanted to do it was it's not like we don't want a front nine and a back nine here. We want it to flow. We wanted you to see it, hear it, and experience it kind of throughout the round rather than, you know, just go one long stretch alongside of it. I like that a lot.
I think the best thing that I did, and you said it, was yardages were meaningless that first round. And the best thing I did was swallow my pride, you know, into the wind, a buck 50, buck 55. I wasn't going to try to muscle. I grabbed hybrid. And it was like, this gives me the best chance to get it as close as I can. And getting to play that type of golf, admittedly, I'm less than an elite ball striker, but it kind of is like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, you just truly, you try to get it to a decent spot and then get it in the hole. And that was really, really fun.
How would you describe your ball striking?
You know, it comes and goes. I made a lot of sloppy fives, which, you know, hey, it happens.
Some of my favorite shots
probably
are when
apathetic would be the best way I'd describe my ball striking.
You walk up to a shot and you're like, okay, you get the yardage. Like, all right, this is probably a 7-iron. And by the time you hit it, you've like settled on 4-iron because you keep like trying to picture your shot and you're like, no, it needs to be lower than that. It needs to be lower than that. And then you're just like, all right, forget the yardage. Let's just get this under the wind, get it running, rolling up there. So,
which I feel like is Lynx golf, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like and we'll get to it, but that was kind of the biggest takeaway to me was like, man, it's a fun way to play.
And so, yeah, we talk about 15th hole. I think I hit like 4-iron from 150 in that, and then we turned around and played 16. It was only about 300 yards from the tees we were playing, and some of us hit irons like over the green. Like it's just complete opposite wind. You couldn't stop the ball. That's just a quintessential, the most fun style of golf you can play.
I thought the par fives on Bandon Dunes were really fun.
I thought every par five on the property was phenomenal. Like that, Sol and I kept saying that to each other the whole time. It was like every par five was just so good.
And we kind of talked like the one, and in Australia, I thought if we were to make a criticism, the par fives were just a bit weak overall. Yeah. I think for that whole trip, this was like the opposite. And we thought the par threes were stellar in Australia. The fives here are just. Yeah, they were some of the most fun golf holes to play. 17th hole was really cool. Come back inland with the canyon along the right side and that kind of hero carry. And then 18 kind of, and I think in general, all the courses on the property, like the first and 18th holes kind of get hit with a little bit of criticism. Yeah. But I think that's more from a logistical standpoint, getting to and from the clubhouse.
Well, and there's some good stuff about the clubhouse that he said on the podcast too.
Right. So initially they had envisioned that the clubhouse would be set where the current 16th green is. And McClay Kidd was
probably the most beautiful, dramatic part of the property.
And McClay Kidd was, you know, less than 30 years old and was the least renowned of any of the architects that kind of were brought in to potentially kind of interview for the job. And the things that he said, and Mike Kaiser had this affinity for Lynx style golf, and the fact that David McClay Kidd was Scottish and came from this background of understanding Lynx golf, he kind of said he bucked the trend in what a lot of people were going to do with the proposal. And he said, no, the clubhouse has got to be set back inland and we got to use this part of the land for the golf course. And that is what stuck with Kaiser the most to make him kind of conclude towards having McClay Kidd built that first course. And now we have the 16th hole, which is one of the more unique golf holes I think I've ever seen. I don't know what you would compare that golf hole to. I don't have anything off the top of my mind.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question.
So
I think the other thing about Bandon Dunes is just the clubhouse there and the whole.
That's the center of it all.
Yeah, it's kind of it's like the heartbeat of the property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reminded me, like sitting out there, that 18th hole kind of reminded me of Royal Birkdale a little bit, where you're like, you know, you're not on the ocean, but you can. You get a big whiff of the ocean being up there, but it's just a subtle reminder that it's about the golf, not necessarily just the views.
Yeah. And at no point do you look at that clubhouse and you're like, oh, this should have been on the ocean. Like, no, it's in the perfect spot.
Yeah.
Does that adequately cover Bandon Dunes, we think?
I can't think of anything else.
All right. Let's move on.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Quick shout out to the green complex at 14. I thought very low key, maybe my favorite out there.
Little par four set back against a dune. There's at the base of a dune. And that's a more interesting hole. Like kind of, you're getting excited for the seaside holes again. You kind of, all right, let's get through this one. And I think I even commented to you, DJ. I was like, this hole's kind of just okay for me. And then we had it in a different wind. And I was like, oh, now I see why these bunkers are here. And this is actually a lot more interesting, this hole, than I originally thought. So and that's kind of what, in that book, McClay Kidd talks about how he needed to make the inland holes interesting, right? I mean, people come for the seaside, but you can't let it feel like a lull on the holes away from the ocean. I think that's pretty well accomplished. So next morning round, Pacific Dunes, the number one rated public golf course in the U.S. Tom Doak, I think it was built 2 years after
the big Doakito.
2 years after Bandon was built, and I think kind of similar to Bandon Dunes, it does a great job of giving you the views early and late in the round, right? So you get that par. There's a par five, the third that goes out towards the ocean that gives you a great view of the ocean, and then the fourth hole is maybe the best hole in the entire property. Yet it didn't win in our composite rankings. That we'll get to some of that, but like a par four set with the ocean along the right. It's every photograph, every postcard that they have at Pacific. So it plays along there, and then the back nine has 10, 11. And 13 are all the holes right along the ocean. But just kind of separating it out, how did Pacific Dunes differ from Bandon Dunes in your guys' mind?
Just more dramatic, like you said earlier.
Yeah, I think it's just bolder.
Everything's just amped up a couple more notches. Like I thought, obviously it's probably the most scenic course I've ever played. And yeah, I mean, like, four was so hard. Seven was so hard. Like, on seven, if you're out of position at all off the tee, like, you almost have to lay up. Like, I made a triple, I think, that first round, and, like, my caddy was like, yeah, dude, like, I told you.
So... It's a great mix of holes, and especially that back nine is, you know, we talked a bit about the preserve and how it bucks the trend of what a golf course is like. And back nine at Trails, or I'm sorry, at Pacific Dunes, is a par 35, four par threes. It starts with two par threes, and there's also three par fives on the back.
I think that's my other criticism of Bandon Dunes, is it's just 36, par 72, whereas the other three courses are all par 71s. And aside from the front nine, I think it Trails, they all have something funky as far as more par threes or more par fives or whatnot, you know, whereas I like the uniqueness of,
but that's where I almost think that's kind of like a result of, you know, when you're going first, you have to just
you
be kind
be
of
standard.
Yeah. You got to be kind of standard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that's what it was for me, was just, he saw the stuff that worked really well at Bandon and just kind of turned it up to 10 on all of them.
The blowout bunkers are bigger.
Exactly.
The dunes are bigger in a lot of circumstances. And there's not, like, some of the bunkers like abandoned are, you know, sod faced bunkers that are not very natural. Whereas Pacific Dunes is probably the most natural of any of the golf courses out there.
There are some good stuff. I don't know if Doak wrote the little passages in the yardage book, but there's some really good ones. Like, I think it's number seven. He says something like,
remarkable natural bunker.
Yeah. While making your way to the green, notice the natural bunkering on the left side. It is quite remarkable.
Doak wrote his own copy for his yardage book,
which
guide.
Is pretty great. But I don't know. You just have, I feel like you have more stretches. I don't know. Maybe this isn't right, but I feel like you have more stretches on Pacific Dunes that are just, you know, cranked up to 10, kind of, that where you can spend an hour and a half at a time, you know, playing these incredible golf holes. Whereas I think Bandon, it was kind of more flashes of that stuff. Like, for me, I thought nine with the double green, such a cool hole. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's, like, fairly unique. I think it's the only double green on the property, if I'm remembering right. Mm-hmm. And then you play 10, 11 are back-to-back par threes that are...
And by double green, you mean
two separate greens. Yeah.
There's a different
upper and a lower.
Yeah. Uppers and downers. but then you play 10 and 11, which are these two, not similar par threes, but back-to-back par threes that both play kind of along the ocean. You know, 10 plays at the ocean. It's got two different tees, which makes it like two completely different golf holes. I wandered down to the lower tee the second time we played, and I felt like an idiot because I'm like, God, I'm like, I like had too many beers and I walked to the wrong hole. Like, these guys are going to think I'm an idiot. And I was like, oh, no, wait, never mind. We're good.
The tee box is
here. Yeah, it's a different tee box. But yeah, you have those stretches where 12 is an awesome par 5. 13 is another cool one along the ocean. I think that's the only ball I actually hit over the cliff.
Alt world.
But yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? You have that's to play those five holes is, you know, an hour and 20 minutes or whatever. And that just, you know, that sticks with me a little bit longer.
I think I reached the singularity.
Yeah.
On that.
Like, that second round around Pacific Dunes was almost life changing.
Like, I think that was part of why I've struggled to adjust back to like reality here, is because it's sensory overload. Like not only does it, you know, are the views incredible, but you know, you've got the wind and like the AC kind of kicks on, you know, where you get a little bit of these like cool pockets, or you smell cedar in the morning, or like the soundtrack is just insane when you get out there on that side of the property. So
I think my only, I don't know, I feel like it kind of closes a bit weak. I think besides 17 is, I think, probably the best Redan I've ever played, or at least the way it played currently from the run up area, the fairway, and the way the green rolled. It was the most well designed or well conditioned Redan, or how it's supposed to roll out.
And I think with the Gorson
board, but 18th was, I didn't, again, common theme on some of these courses, the 18th hole is a weaker hole, but I thought it's some forgettable holes in that stretch again, but we're nitpicking when talking about that.
18 because was the only hole in Pacific that I really like, I had a kind of a philosophical problem with.
I think 18 might be the only hole in the entire property I didn't like.
But yeah, I thought, I don't know, 15, 16 are kind of just a little bit forgettable holes, but again, it's such a tour de force for those first 14, 13 holes that, that I can see it's totally justified. I actually didn't like Pacific Dunes the first time I played it, like 5 years ago, but it totally redeemed itself. I thought, as weird as it sounds, the yellow pins just resonated with me. Like seeing the yellow pins up against that ocean, I thought that was just such a good look. I know that's probably
it's little things.
It's the very little things. But that's something that we'll get into a little segment later of things that are going to stick with you. I will remember those yellow pins.
Well, I was very curious to see if like I was so pumped when we went down to Australia and played Barmugal Dunes, and I felt like it was just kind of overwrought and like too extreme and everything. And I think this was such a better representation of Doak. You know, from a seaside perspective, like everything was done with a little bit more restraint, a little bit more nuance.
Yeah, I thought that was, I mentioned it earlier, but that's another spot where I literally went 49-35 the second time we played, because it was like, you know, once you find your swing and you're kind of going along, it's like if you're not doing anything stupid and you kind of hit it in the right spots and you're not trying to be too overly aggressive, you can score and you can play pretty well, and that's what I think makes like a really fun golf course.
It was surprisingly
on the front nine I was not doing that.
Yeah, it was surprisingly comfortable. That was the kind of thing I remember coming off the real windy go round of Bandon Dunes. The next morning, very little wind, really nice conditions, and I was almost on autopilot, you know, hitting the ball decently, and you know, you just kind of make your way around and it's very comfortable and you get to enjoy the sights.
I think we'd have a very different take if the wind was blowing 40 when we were in the Pacific.
I think it would have been absolute carnage.
I felt like I noticed a difference in the way even the ball sounded hitting the greens. It was firmer at Pacific Dunes, and I don't know if that's intentional or from a how they handle that from a conditioning standpoint, if
those were the best greens that we played on.
Purest greens, but the hardest. And it was kind of like we had to get used to really running the ball up onto a lot of those greens. But yeah, I thought the two nines are very different. The back nine is obviously much more gettable. But we got to see Pacific Dunes in the morning and in the afternoon. And that was kind of,
Afternoon round, we played trails in the morning and we played Pacific in the afternoon. Or is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we, like, it was sunny and, you know, really nice when we teed off, but it was getting kind of hot, and the fog rolled in about 7 or 8 holes in, and it was the most drastic change in weather on a golf course I've ever seen.
And I ditched my long sleeves. I had nothing. And then it literally dipped 20 degrees probably in that time. But that was kind of a zen like feeling of playing that course in a different condition, right? Cause we got the perfect sun the day before. Mm-hmm. It was cool to kind of see it in a different light, because it's the Bandon experience is not sunny and roses all day, every day. I mean, part of the experience is experiencing the different weather. So, all right, guys, we're going to cut part one right there as we're halfway through the four golf courses. The second half will be released later this week. We're going to talk more about what our favorite courses are, how we would split 10 rounds amongst these four courses, what our favorite stretches of holes are on the golf course, as well as kind of filling in anything else we missed out on in part one. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening, and we'll check in later this week. Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect